And this is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. Earlier this week, the Alaska Department of Health confirmed a measles case in an adult on the southern Kenai Peninsula. An unvaccinated adult developed symptoms of the extremely contagious but preventable viral infection earlier this month while traveling to Alaska from overseas. That's according to a public health alert from the state's health department. South Peninsula Hospital reported through a press release Friday the patient went to Homer Medical Center before receiving care at the hospital's emergency department. Public health nurse Tammy Marsters says early measles symptoms are similar to cold and flu symptoms.
Measles typically starts with a fever, runny nose, cough, red eyes, and a sore throat, which of course is what everything else starts with, right? And then it's followed by a rash. Most frequently that starts on the face and descends to the trunk and limbs.
Marsters says measles symptoms usually start to appear 8 to 12 days after exposure. A rash typically shows up 10 to 14 days after exposure, and people are generally infectious 4 days before and after a rash appears. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, measles is highly contagious and can quickly spread in populations where more people are unvaccinated. Because measles can be potentially life-threatening, the CDC recommends vaccinating to prevent outbreaks. In 2024, 40% of reported measles cases in the United States resulted in hospitalizations for treatment or isolation. Marsters says complications are most common in children under 5 years, adults over 20 years, immunocompromised people, and pregnant people. She says the best way to protect yourself is to get the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine.
Vaccinate. And if you're sick, stay home. And if you feel that you were exposed, watch yourself carefully for signs and symptoms.
She says to call a provider ahead of time before seeking care at a clinic. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is poised to be the country's new Health and Human Services Secretary with the incoming Trump administration. If confirmed, Kennedy has pledged to advise all U.S. water systems to remove fluoride from public water. A growing number of cities in the U.S. have already done that on their own, and residents' teeth offer a preview of how that policy could affect dental health nationwide. Juneau pulled fluoride from its tap water nearly 2 decades ago. And as KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, data shows kids in Juneau are getting more cavities.
So dry. And paint.
Dr. Yvonne Tijerina Burleson uses a tiny toothbrush to paint topical fluoride on a patient's teeth.
Simple, with some amazing benefits.
They're at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium's dental clinic in Juneau. The patient chose marshmallow flavor.
Yeah, it smells really good. These would be great candles. Candle scents.
Applying topical fluoride is a typical practice for most dentists across the U.S. But in Juneau, it's an especially critical one. That's because it hasn't been in the water for nearly 2 decades. And since then, data shows kids in Juneau have started getting cavities at a higher rate. Dr. Dane Lineker directs dental services for the Search Clinic.
Fluoride has a, as we would say, a karyoprotective effect. Like, it can prevent cavities. It can slow down the disease process. Fluoride can help remineralize and strengthen the teeth.
Around 70% of the U.S. population has access to fluoridated tap water. Dental experts and studies say it helps prevent cavities.
Fluoride, if you're not getting it in the water system and it's not getting incorporated into your teeth that way, this is another way that it basically gets painted onto your teeth.
Public health officials say putting a small amount of fluoride in the water supply is an easy and cost-effective way for large-scale cavity prevention. But some researchers and critics, like RFK Jr., argue it may lead to health issues. RFK Jr. says fluoride is industrial waste and associates it with issues like lower IQ in children. Now, there's some evidence of that at high levels of exposure, but not at the level that goes into U.S. water supplies. There's conflicting narratives, but one thing is clear. The U.S. is seeing more and more cities opt out of fluoridated tap water. About 2 decades ago, Juneau residents overwhelmingly voted to remove fluoride from the local water supply. And if Juneau's dental health now is any indicator of what's in store for cities that might follow RFK Jr.'s advice, America could be seeing a lot more cavities.
I think Juneau offered us a good example of some of the challenges we set ourselves up for when we decide to stop fluoridating the water.
Jennifer Meyer is a public health researcher who conducted a study that shows that kids in Juneau have needed more dental work since they stopped getting fluoride in the water.
places that are going to cease fluoridation, just hold on to your pocketbook because it's going to get expensive.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention would agree with that claim. Her study focused specifically on the teeth of children under 6 in Juneau. She used a set of Medicaid dental claims to get data for nearly 2,000 kids, a decent sample size for a small town.
What we know happens is over time, you start to see kids with more and more decay and some with some really advanced decay.
Her study found that when the water had fluoride in it, kids had an average of 1.5 cavity-related procedures per year. But once it was gone, that went up to about 2.5 procedures a year. Her Juneau-specific study's conclusion is not far off from what other researchers say. The CDC calls the fluoridation of drinking water one of the greatest public health interventions of the 20th century, attributing it to averting millions of cavities in the decades it's been implemented. The American Dental Association shared a statement this fall that endorsed water fluoridation, saying there's clear and compelling evidence around the benefits of it. Still, not everyone is convinced. David Hamm is one of the advocates who wanted to remove fluoride from Juneau's water. He doesn't have a problem with fluoride on his teeth. He has a problem with drinking it.
I used a fluoride toothpaste, and then I could spit out the toothpaste and not swallow it and ingest a questionable substance into my body.
He sees the value in fluoride, but argues that it can be administered in ways other than putting it in the water supply. But not everyone has access to regular dental care or fluoride pills. Health officials say fluoridated water is especially important for kids in vulnerable populations.
We all want to have a silver bullet solution to a problem, but there isn't, because life isn't like that. Fluoride, this fluoride issue is not like that. There are steps you can take that don't involve telling everybody to, you know, drink fluoride.
Now, no one in Juneau drinks fluoride. It's an all-or-nothing situation. And the city's experience shows that when people have to opt in to use fluoride, it can lead to more cavities. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And the U.S. Forest Service plans to raise 5 new totem poles, Kutia and Tlingit, at the Mendenhall Glacier. At an open house on Wednesday, it was clear that the Kutia are meant to honor and acknowledge the original people of the land. But those original people say they should be included in creating the plan. When the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska and the Forest Service unveiled the plan, they came with slideshows and maps. But the conversation gets heated among the 24 attendees when it turns to how the totem poles, the Kutia, would represent the people and history of this place.
I don't deny anybody their right. I don't have the authority to do that. However, I would like for history to be followed accurately.
Yanis Chuk Mike Tagabon's concern is one of many about stewardship, clan representation, and belonging. And several tribal members are upset about the lack of consultation in this process. Sekuni Fran Houston is one of them. She's the spokesperson for the Ak Kwan, the Tlingit people who originally lived in what's now called Ak Bay.
Because sometimes I feel like I'm being stomped on. We're being stomped on.
Nechka Kuge Taja Revels is the executive director of Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. She stands up to defend the project, but also to acknowledge that this project has departed from the Tlingit way of raising Kutia.
I know this isn't the way that we do things, that we're forced into a Western process where we have to get permission first before we can start talking to the clans about designs, how we're going to do this properly.
But she says this is also a chance to correct the lie that natural spaces like the glacier are inherently devoid of indigenous people.
We were the natural landscape. We were the last frontier. This gives us an opportunity when visitors come to see the gorgeous lands that we are either guests on or stewards of, to see that Tlingit people have always been in these places.
Michael Downs, the district ranger for the U.S. Forest Service and one of the presenters, it's quick to say the plan isn't even close to final.
There's no big decisions have been made. There's plenty of time for these great discussions. I want you to all understand that.
And to address some of the frustrations shared by tribal members, Downs says the Forest Service plans to have many meetings in the future about the Kutia.
So this is not like something's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, I'm just being honest, they're probably going to be about $250,000 a piece, and we don't have the money right now.
This co-management relationship between the tribe and the Forest Service is only a couple of years old. Lee Miller is Occoquan, and he was a cultural ambassador at the Glacier last year. That's a new role at the Glacier. Tribal members educate tourists on Tlingit culture and its connections to the landscape.
Last year, we saw fantastic changes and more to come. This is our opportunity, folks. Put aside the bickering. Make this ours. Own it. It's been a long time coming.
He says an opportunity for more Tlingit representation at the Glacier wasn't imaginable a few years ago.
What was out there? The glacier, the waterfall, the wildlife. And it's still there. But we're there. We are finally there.
Sa'ach Margaret Katzik, who's Jill Kat Kwan, came to the meeting with several of her nieces and nephews. She grew up here, and she plans to raise her children here.
I just think that it would be really important for them to be able to see something like this wherever they are, and know that they are part of this land as well, and that they belong here, and that they are important and cared about and respected.
She says kutia at the Glacier would show future generations their reflections in the landscape. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery.